On this episode of Aviator Cast, I speak with Ryan Dombrowski from Super Aero, and we talk about learning to fly and balancing family life with flying.
Welcome, aviators, to another episode of Aviator Cast. Load up your flight bag with useful flight training topics, interviews, and aviation passion. Let's kick the tires and light the fires. Coming to you from Angle of Attack Headquarters in Homer, Alaska, here's your host and flight instructor, Chris Palmer.
Hello, aviators. My name is Chris Palmer from Angle of Attack. It's great to have you back here at Aviator Cast. I've got another great discussion for you today with a friend of mine, Ryan Dombrowski. So I found Ryan on YouTube. He has this really great channel called Super Aero, and I just ran across it randomly as I was browsing videos. He and I have since become friends, and I relate to him a lot because he's got kids that are young, and I do too. And it's kind of tough to balance that sometimes. So we get into that discussion, but he lives in an area of Wisconsin that is pretty unique. There's lots of aviation support around where he's at. But we kind of get into a conversation mostly about how we juggle everyday life with flying and how it's possible to still do that with some of the options that are out there. So he's just a really funny guy. This is a really fun conversation. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Before we get into that, remember you can leave a review for Aviator Cast either here on YouTube if you're watching and there is some funny stuff to watch on this one, or you can review it on iTunes as well. I get those reviews. They come across through some software that I have. And if I do read your review, then I will send you guys an Aviator Cast, or rather a shirt. So it's a clear prop t-shirt that I have with the Flight School Airplane on. It's pretty funny. Or an aviator hat. So this Angle of Attack hat that I have has an aviator on it. It's Homer, Alaska. You can see both of those on my website at angleofattack.com/shop. So you know what they are. But yeah, if you leave a review and I read your review on the show, then I'll share one of those with you guys. So let's just get into it. Let's talk to Ryan. Kind of fun. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope you enjoy this. Here we go. All right, everyone, we're honored to have a very special guest with us today. We have Ryan Dombrowski with us, also known as Super Aero. How you doing, Ryan?
Good. Good job on the pronunciation. First try. You got it.
I nailed it. Yeah. Yeah. I think I'll still call you Broski, though. That's new. It's new. So, Ryan, you are adhering to the quarantine / social distancing down there in Wisconsin. How you doing with all that? Everything going good?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in my basement right now. Like,
we can tell it's dark. It's a little dark and scary in there.
It's dark and creepy. I'm in the basement. You don't actually need to be in the basement, right? But no, we're doing good, man. We're doing good. Luckily right now, cool. My family's safe. We're all really good.
Right on. And obviously, we're here to talk aviation. We're all kind of dreaming of it right now. Have you been out to visit your plane recently, like just to look at it? Did you do that? You didn't?
No, I have. I haven't gone out to see it. So and this is not like I'm not trying to like poo-poo other people's. Everyone does what they're comfortable in these situations. A lot. I'm in a club, and the other members are like flying the pants off the plane right now.
Okay.
And so. Okay. That's up to them, right? Like that's their choice. But given that I got kids and I've got some older relatives that might need to rely on me, depending on how long this goes on, I made the decision just to chill. It actually turned out that wasn't the worst decision because we just found out a couple days ago that the plane is throwing metal into the oil filter. So it's time for an overhaul. So
yeah, bummer.
But if you're gonna overhaul it now.
Yeah, totally. Perfect time. In fact, I'm thinking of some avionics stuff too. So it might, I don't know, it's actually not a super good time for me, but I totally get you, man. Like I had someone write me the other day and they're like, hey, we're in town and my wife and I are in town. We want to go for a flight. And I'm just like, yeah, I can't tell you how many rules that's breaking, like even on a state level right now. So nope, sorry. We'll wait a little longer for that. So I get it.
It's different state by state, right? But I think here we're able to do it based on the rules. But I think it's just the important thing is like do what you think is best for your family and what safety precautions you want to take first and foremost. And so that's where I've been at with my club members. Like, I don't want to be clear if they see this that I'm not like mad at them. It just meant that I had to make a different decision for my family, right?
Yeah. And that's personal for everyone. So yeah, I'm pretty much on the same level you're at there. Like, we can think smartly, but also, I don't know, do other things. But anyway, it kind of reminds me actually of aviation risk assessment a lot. Like, I was talking to my friend about it, and he's like, another friend, he's like, hey, do you think you want to get our families together? And just like, yeah, probably not. And Alaska's different because we have like zero, I don't want to say like zero cases, but like, we are the lowest state.
Yeah.
Like, we've had like 300 confirmed cases. We've had 9 deaths. Like, it's nothing, right? So there's this false sense of security, I think, that like people want to get out and just do anything. And so I tell him, I'm like, hey, from an aviation safety standpoint, like, the best guarantee for me is just like zero. Like, that just guarantees like nothing's going to happen. So that's how I think of it.
Yeah, I think you and I were actually chatting about that online a little bit, right? Like, I think... I kind of lost my train of thought, but I think that definitely in terms of like that risk assessment thing, like we were talking about, I think you and I were talking about the marbles, like the jar of marbles.
Oh, yeah,
I like
that. Yeah.
And so I think like aviation, that's totally it, right? Like, if you knew that there was like a ball you'd pull out and your plane would go down, like, you wouldn't. Anyway, I don't want to get too deep into like the doom and gloom of the times, but.
I know. But it's true, though, because like you did bring up a really good analogy. Like, you brought up an analogy of if there were 4 black marbles in a jar, like, are you going to pull one out? But I think we can even just take that like the aviation direction, because if I go on a flight and like I have 1 black marble in a jar of 100, I'm never taking that flight. Like, there's no way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, those marbles are there, right? Like, they're kind of always there.
They're gray, though. Yeah, they're like gray, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're gray. Yeah, for sure.
Black marbles? I don't know. Like, but maybe they are. I don't know. Okay. Let's go back to the very beginning of you, little Ryan. And where did you fall in love with aviation? At what time? What was going on in your life? Take us back.
That's a great question. So, I mean, I had grew up kind of like in a lower income family. Flying was something that I always dreamed of. It was like the kid drawing, you know, pictures of airplanes. I think we probably all were. This actually brought a prop for you, Chris. Like this, right?
Nice.
Yes.
Like that for everybody is like
Top Gun, man.
Top Gun, right? And I had all these Ertl, like these, like, you know, I think they got like landing gear that come out and everything. So that was, I mean, my parents were super supportive with it. We just couldn't make it happen for me. I think the time it like really hit was I went on a flight at an EAA event in Racine, Wisconsin. I rode in a, I don't know if it was an R-44.
Oh, wow.
Just was like blown away from being, I mean, not high. You don't go very high in those, right? But that was like kind of like the defining moment, I think, for me. Was that like going up and just finally getting some not jet time, right? But some time, like low and slow, right?
So how old do you think you were when that happened?
You know, I was asking my dad the other day because I just told this story to another friend and I couldn't remember. He said he thought I was probably like 9 or 10.
That's great. And Wisconsin is really neat because there's so much good aviation support around there. EAA kind of has their fingers that spread out, and there's really good EAA, what do they call it? Young Eagles, right? So that was a Young Eagles event.
Yeah, it was a Young Eagles event, and actually it's funny, right? You talk about like EAA being in Wisconsin. Like, I had one of my favorite memories growing up was my dad like threw us all in the Winnebago. We drove all the way up to Oshkosh, which is only like from where we live, like three hours ish at the time. And we like slept in a Walmart parking lot that night. And the next day we went to the museum and just spent the day in the EA museum. And I remember that they have that, the aero car, you know what I'm talking about? The one with
I do.
It's like a car that turns into an airplane. And I spent like an hour, like just like drawing it and taking notes on
that's
it.
That's so cool.
So, I mean, having that resource in like the Midwest. I mean, you've got a couple. You've got like the Air Force Museum, I think, is in Ohio, right? You've got a couple that
right.
are nearby, but mostly it's like, unless you go like, I mean, that's far for us in Wisconsin. So having that there is so, I don't know, props to them for picking Oshkosh back in the day. Like, it was nice for us.
Yeah, for me, you know, it's interesting because when I did my CFI rating, I did it in Oshkosh, had a friend there that is a longtime instructor. In fact, he was like the airport manager of Whitman Field, and he was the chief pilot at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation for their aviation division. Anyway,
yeah,
like I had these really good moments at the museum, like just thinking about my future as an instructor. Like I remember I was by the Spirit of St. Louis display, just sitting there and like writing out who I was going to be as an instructor in the future and in my dreams. And it was just, I don't know, it is actually a really special place, and they have different things that go on there. I saw a Medal of Honor recipient that did a talk there. He was a helicopter pilot. He was portrayed in the movie. Gosh, We Were Soldiers.
Oh, really?
With Mel Gibson. Yeah, yeah. He was portrayed as a guy there. But it's a pretty crazy story. I mean, just as like a tangent, I know this is your podcast, but
it's your podcast. Say whatever you want.
It's your story. But anyway, so he was a helicopter pilot, and he was medevacing guys out, and none of the other pilots would go in because the fire was so heavy. And I think he saved like 70 plus people and flew a handful of different helicopters. Every time he'd go in, they'd get shot up and they'd become unusable. He'd just jump in another one and go back, and he just kept doing that. Anyway, that's the sort of stuff you can get when you're close to EAA. It's just a really special place.
Yeah, and there's so much history there. And just captured there, I think. I mean, I say to people, like, never mind Air. I mean, Air Venture is amazing, right?
It is.
Or Oshkosh is amazing. But, like, you owe it to yourself to either come a little early or come a little late. And I sound like I'm, like, sponsored by EAA right now. But, like, you owe it to yourself to, like, check that part out, too. It's also just, like, during the show, it's a nice place to, like, collect your thoughts. Like, get away from the craziness. But anyway, I'll let, yeah. When you have someone from EAA on, ask them about that. They can elaborate. It's their job, not mine.
It's true. It's true. But it is a cool place. They have buses that you can take out there. And it is a little bit different during EAA to go out there. But yeah, I mean, stuff going on year round, obviously, in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really touch on this. Let's like skip all the way forward now and tell people what you're doing now. That, like, why would I have this random Ryan Dombrowski on the show?
Yeah, I probably do look a little random. Well, I mean, so first of all, like, what's so crazy about this is that, like, you are in Alaska right now and I'm in Wisconsin, and we know each other. I mean, we've met in person now, but we actually know each other because of this crazy thing that all of us do, which is make content around aviation. And I am a baby in that world, I think, to be fair, but like, you and I have connected over that. And so that, when someone asked me the other day, like, you know, what's your, I'm trying to get the exact phrasing, it was like, what's the most important thing you've gotten from aviation? And I remember, let's go back to EAA for a second, like Paul Poberesny, right? He was always talking about, like, come for the plane, stay for the people. There's that legendary quote from him. And I remember when I first started flying, I was like, I don't know, like, I don't really like any of these people. I didn't hit my stride right away. With it. And now, like, through just adjusting my levels here for you, through this making content and meeting people that way, like, I've got friends like all over the globe, which is just insane. So that's my new favorite part, right? Like, I'm not flying a ton right now. We talked about it at the front, but we all have this common thing that binds us. And so that's kind of, I don't know, I know that's not what you asked me, but, like, I think that's why I'm still doing what I'm doing and still kind of fighting and trying to create content. So let me answer the question. So I have a YouTube channel called Super Aero. A couple thousand subscribers. Come on and join if you're listening. Got to get the plug in there. But, you know, I started doing it just as a, like, so I am a a professional filmmaker, producer. I make TV commercials for a living. And when I was learning how to fly, I was learning in J3 Piper Cubs. And I remember saying to my flight instructor, his name's Steve Krog, I said, man, like, how cool is it that you, Steve, get paid to do this? Like, he's like riding around in the pattern with me. And I was like, this is just great. We're like one of those like idyllic like J3 days where it's like sun and warmth and corn and all that stuff. And he was like, well, you could too. And I'm like, it's like such a short throw in terms of my skill set that I had never even thought of it. So I dabbled a little bit, did some content for them, I made a movie that actually is played at AirVenture. It's about the 75th anniversary of the Piper Cub. And then it was So after that, I was like, dude, I should just actually do this. So just started making videos for YouTube and goofing off in planes in a safe way, just being my kind of weird self. And now, you know, it's weird because like I started that right as we had our first kid. And that is like the absolute worst time to start.
It's awful. Yeah. It really is.
I mean, like, I've got other pilot buddies, right? And they're like, oh, hey, like, I don't know. They'll be like, oh, hey, like, just tell your wife to watch the kids this weekend while we go fly to, like, St. Louis. It's like, bro.
You do not get this.
That's not how this works when you have killed children. So it's just hard, but I'm still pushing. I'm still trying to make content. It's opened up some cool opportunities in addition to some cool friends like meeting you and some other guys. It's just opened up some doors, which has been really exciting too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not to take away from us talking about it later, maybe it's just the perfect time to talk about it now, but I was really attracted to your channel because you're just super authentic and funny. Like you're not trying to sell anything. You're not trying to be anyone special. You're just doing goofy, funny stuff. But not even for like funny sake, you know, I don't know. Like there's this video where you went and picked up Girl Scout cookies from your friend, like a work friend, I think. And at some point you're trying to figure out the cost of the cookies, but you've got like all the cookies in your mouth, like doing the math in your head. It's just, I don't know, man. It's just,
yeah. I mean, but that's what, so here's the thing. I mean, it's going to sound like another rant for a second, but like, if you can hear my dog barking up there, we are in the basement. It's a pandemic. Chill out. So you know, like there's this like age old debate in flying about like warbird dudes and like wearing the flight suit. And this is controversial. I'm going to drop a controversy on your podcast.
Just drop the bomb. Yes, drop it.
So here's my take on that, right? Like, obviously, like, mad respect to the people who wear the flight suit for our country. Like, do the service thing. Like, they're serving us. That's awesome. And you earned every right to have any position you want. Then there's, like, the guys who buy warbirds and have the flight suit. And then there's like people who are civilians who are in the flight suit, you know, like all the way down. And there's this huge debate about like whether you should, whether you shouldn't. Are you a poser? Are you not? And I think all that's irrelevant because in the end, even the folks who are flying, well, not these anymore, right? But even the folks that are flying these, in my opinion, they all started with the fantasy. It all started with the fantasy of flight. Not a plug for Kermit Weeks. It all started with that fantasy of being up in the air, right? So when I go fly, I want to be safe first and foremost. That's like rule one. But rule two, like I want to have fun, right? I'm not in a position where I need to fly. You might have that situation where you need to fly because it's your job.
But it wasn't always that way for me. Yeah, it wasn't always that way.
But I think like while we're up there, let's just have fun. So if that means that someone wants to strap on a flight suit and go fly their old biplane or whatever, like, dude, that's awesome. I think it's awesome, personally. I don't know. You're probably going to get a bunch of hate mail of people like, yeah, but no mechs or something. I don't know.
I wonder if that's a sign I should start wearing a flight suit. I should be that guy. And it's got to be bright orange, like one of the NASA ones, just because it's on brand.
Well, I mean, Elliot, right? The test pilot, he's rocking that orange one. but he legitimately needs it.
but he's like a test pilot. Like, that's different. I haven't done anything. I've flown Cessnas and Bonanzas and stuff.
But let's be real for a second. Like, where am I going with this? You fly in like some of the most insane environments, like the terrain you're flying over. Like, you might want to wear an orange flight suit.
I guess there's a practical reason for it. I could see that. I don't know.
If I have engine trouble, I'm going down in a cornfield
with probably a grass runway or something. Like, they're everywhere in Wisconsin.
Yeah, just point.
Yep.
You'll find one. Anyway, so that, I don't know, that was a weird tangent to talk about flight suits, but like, I think for me, and I know you just had like, you know, awesome F-16 pilot on. I can't believe I'm on this podcast. You have an F-16 pilot on this podcast.
Well, gosh, I don't even feel like I should be flying after talking to someone like that. But I mean, he thinks it's cool too. He thinks everything's cool too. So we're good. We're good. We're all buddies.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, dude, that, like, mad respect for that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you stop dog barking? I don't know if the viewers can see or hear the dog.
Oh, I'm sure they can hear it. So yeah, shoot a text.
See if she can stop him barking. That's Rocket the dog, everybody. He's nervous. He's just generally nervous. So anyway, I think that's my whole thing. And I appreciate you calling that out. I just want to have fun. I want people to be like, this is such a cliche, but like, I'm just like a normal dude in Milwaukee, Wisconsin with two kids and like, I'm privileged to have the job I have, but like, flying is a stretch for me, you mm-hmm. know? And I think if you're going to stretch, like, it's gotta be worth it in terms of fun. You gotta have fun. I want everyone who wants this to be able to have it. And so,
right.
I don't know. That sounds like kind of conceited or like maybe a little altruistic, or I don't know what the right descriptor is.
I don't think so, though, because honestly, it's the same for me. Like, at my level of income and where I'm at with everything, if I wasn't doing this for an actual job, like, I would not be able to afford to fly that often. And like, even for you, I think something we can get into eventually is, like, you're a part owner in an airplane, right? So
yeah,
it's not like you can just go out and buy an airplane and like fly it on your own. Like, even you are trying to do it in a wise way where you can keep doing it. So yeah, like, even for me, even though I do it for a living, even though flight instruction is fairly serious in a lot of ways, like, I'm the sort of guy that's like, hey, take a picture, like, stop what you're doing for 5 minutes, take a picture, enjoy the scenery, enjoy what you're doing. And then just to bring fun into it, like, when we do our pre-landing checklist, our C-gumps, carb heat, gas, undercarriage mixture, props, seatbelt switches, and then I always say snacks at the end. Just, like, throw it in there. Just, like, loosens up the student a little bit, you know. I don't know. We don't have to be so robotic when we're pilots. There's, you know, we've got to enjoy it.
So, you know, I flew, this is just, I want to give credit to the person who said this out loud. You know, the Aviator PPG guys. I got to hang out with them at Oshkosh last year, and they have this phrase when they're training their students about, on these powered paramotors, you know, you got for the people at home, you look into it if you haven't looked, it's like basically wearing a lawnmower on your back. You got like a giant wing above you. Mm-hmm. And I got to just kite the wing, you know, and like learn a little bit about that on camera, which was also separately a little terrifying. Because I'm not a man of movement, and these are fairly athletic guys teaching me this. But the thing they always say to their students is, remember that this is fun. Like, before you do it, before you're like about to run into the air or do this difficult thing, like, it's like, take a deep breath, remember this is fun. And that like stuck with me in that moment, because I was struggling. Right. And mm-hmm. it's like, okay, this is really good. But then separately for all of aviation, like, there's a little bit of like gatekeeping in our community a little bit. And it's because we've all had to, everyone had to fight to get here. Even people who have a ton of money and can afford the training, they're still struggling. I mean, I'm sure you see it with your students all the time. It's the flight training is like the great equalizer. So
yep, it is.
And so all of us on the other side, if you're listening to this, thinking about joining this brother and sisterhood, right? Like, all of us struggled to get here. And so I think that moment of like, just remember that this is fun. Like, you know, mm-hmm. even, you know, it was rain, right? the F-16 pilot.
Yep, John Rainwaters. Yep.
Yeah, like he's having fun up there, and that's hard work. Like he's doing hard work when he's flying that plane, right? But he's still having fun. So I think, I don't know. I'm just going to keep, every time you give me a question, Chris, I'm going to soapbox for like 5 minutes and I apologize.
That's exactly what I want. Like you nailed it, man. I didn't even have to wait until the end when I asked for your advice for others, but it's so true just because, you know, with students, especially when I see them struggling, it's like, listen, you just got to relax, like just have fun. And people just get way into their head about what's coming next and what they're doing wrong. And, you know, then there's that self-defeating talk it's like, oh, I'm not actually going to achieve this. I can't get my landings down. I'm afraid of stalls, whatever it is. People can't seem to get over some of that stuff. They just need to be reminded to have fun. And I think even for me, that's a lot of what I try to bring to the table in my instruction. Even my social media is just like, we can be serious about things and we can be professional about things, but at the same time we can relax and have fun too. So that's a very important message.
Well, and I think obviously that's not permission to play fast and loose with anything.
No, right?
But like, I think that's, yeah, like, it's like the number two thing you do in my book, right? It's like,
right.
Be safe is one.
Yep. Yep.
Two. Number two is have fun.
Yep. I'm 100% there. And I even had a friend send me a video, like a pretty sketch video a couple days ago of someone else. He was complaining about doing something unsafe. And that's just not the sort of thing I do. You know, I'm a safe pilot and I can also still have a lot of fun. So you can have both for sure. Let's rewind the clock a little bit. Let's go back to you doing your training. So did you actually do your training at Cub Air? Is that where you got your private?
Yeah, I'm a Cub Air alum. That's where I was at.
Nice. Nice. So tell people about that, because it's a really interesting, I mean, you may not think so, but it actually is. It's like a really interesting, very unique operation. So just explain what it is to people and kind of the makeup and the area. Steve, even talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm laughing because I've got a million stories about Steve. But so,
right.
Sorry, Steve. Don't worry. Your secrets are safe with me. So I think the thing about Cub Air. So when I, this was, I should have pulled my logbook out before I started this interview. Like, I think, man, it must have been 2012 is when I got my private certificate. So had this kind of like life-changing event a little bit. One of my cousins, older cousin, he's probably about as old as I am now, passed away, and I was like, whoa, we're running out of time. And I was like in my late 20s. It's like, oh, we're running out of time. Like, let's get this started. And so used that as a catalyst to get started in training. And I was looking through all these different schools. I went there's a bunch of them in Milwaukee and Racine and Wisconsin. And then I was a member of EAA, right? Here I go again. Member of EAA, got the like Sport Aviation magazine, reading the Stick and Rudder articles that Steve's writing, and I realized he's like right there. He's just like a 45-minute drive away. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think I didn't think motor aircraft were in my future based on the financial situation at the time. And so I went and took a glider flight also at Hartford. That's where the like Wisconsin Soaring Club is. Took this mm-hmm. glider flight, almost hurled all over myself. It was awesome, but also like hard. It was like a hard soaring day, and I'm like recovering. It's so great. You guys got to go soaring sometime. Like these, like the grandmas came out. It sounds so bad. It's like generally older guys at this club, and like these older women came out and they were like giving me lemonade, and I'm like drinking lemonade, trying to like turn not green anymore. And this Piper Cub comes in on final, and you know that noise? There's like that noise that a Piper Cub will make when it's at idle. It's like, and it seems more obvious with the Piper Cub than others. I think it's maybe just that smaller engine. It's like mm-hmm. that whistle of the prop. That's like, mm-hmm. I can't make it. I'm not good at sound effects, but I don't know. Look it up, folks. Like, and I was like, that. Like, I need that. Like, I still want to go soaring. I want to get my glider rating and stuff. But, like, hearing that noise and seeing the pilot in there, like, bring it in on this beautiful, like, grass runway. So I just saved up a little longer, went up there and learned. And so I'm beating around the bush a little bit. Cub Air is a Piper Cub exclusive school. You learn in J3 Cubs from the 40s, tube and fabric, door open. Mm-hmm. It's all that they call it, like, old school is still cool training there. So you're literally like, and hopefully you're doing this and you're training elsewhere too, at least at one point, in my opinion, because it's probably just me flexing my tailwheel old school training, but like having a piece of paper with a line on it, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, I got lost on my solo cross country and like I ended up like pulling out my phone and like pulling Four Flight up to like rescue myself. And Krog is like, what are you doing? I was like, well, like I didn't want to run out of gas. So that's like the way they train is like this really like super stick and rudder basics. And you're flying, I mean, all year round. But in the summer, it's a grass field. One of the runways there is grass. And actually, they've got an opposing runway that's also grass kind of next to the hard surface. And you are, you just like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like Wisconsin in the summer, like at sunset. If you've been to Oshkosh, you know this, or just in the Midwest probably, right? You've got like just I don't know. It feels like poetic as you're like going around the pattern and landing and stuff. So that was like the backdrop. And it's actually really funny, right? You like, you do all this work in the J3, you get really good, you go solo, you do your first solo cross country in the J3. And then they're like, and now, because on the test, there are things like radios and VORs and all that stuff. Like they throw you into a more modern airplane. So in my case, it was a Piper Cherokee. And I remember like, being confused. We went up to Oshkosh, the first flight in it, to like do some pattern work in it. And like, flaps? What?
Yeah.
Like, how do they work? Totally, like, you know, scared me almost, right? Because it's like work. It's like a whole new system. So that was, I mean, Steve there, he's a fixture in aviation, I think. Lucky to have had him as my instructor. He's maybe probably where I got that like safety first, fun second thing. It's a great school. I mean, I think it has its disadvantages too, right? You're learning an older technology. You're learning like pattern work at a towered airport. Like I was not freaked out. That's a little dramatic, but like I was uncomfortable in towered environments when I came out of that school. And I think maybe towered pilots will say they're uncomfortable in uncontrolled fields or non-controlled fields.
It is. Yeah. It goes both ways for sure.
So I don't know. Long story short, that's where I went to school for pilot training. That's as far as I've gone. Like now I've got I'm a partner in a Cessna 172, which felt like a race car compared to a J3 Cub.
Yeah, no kidding. Uncle Victor needs the heart transplant and then he'll be back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've actually, I've been to Cub Air before and it was actually the fall time, like perfect, like the perfect week where the colors are just out and in full bloom and perfect. And my friends and I, we took two of the planes up. So we did some air to air photos with the leaves behind. It was just like, it was magical. So I know what you mean. Like that's not necessarily a summer day, but there's just something about the rolling hills there. And especially that time of year with the colors and the like also the color of the Piper Cub, which is that yellow, that famous yellow color. One of the best flights I've ever taken. I think even one of the photos is in Flying Magazine or something. They saw one of them and they even put it in there. So it was that good. Like it made Flying Magazine. It was that good.
I think too, like the importance of that, like that experience also, you know, for your students or for people listening, like that, it was weird for me to like bomb out the tailwheel endorsement like right away. Like that was like part of the initial training. I think though, like what I learned from it at, like I didn't realize I was learning it, but as you get further, and I'm not like I am barely current in my two kid dad professional job right now. I want to be like totally clear. I've had moments in my flying career where I know that extra little experience of tailwheel has like really helped. And so what I always tell people when they're asking me about it is like, you don't have to do that up front, right? You don't anything, you know, soaring, go mountain flying, you know, go tailwheel endorsement, like all that stuff like adds to your little breadth of knowledge. And it's also stuff that feels like it makes you safer because you just know a little bit more. And it also is just, it goes back to that fun thing, right? Like, you know,
right.
A Piper Cub is not practical at all. You can't go, I mean, you could go someplace in it, but it's not like, you know, a 172 is a cross-country demon.
Right, right. Yeah, it's very versatile compared to the J3 for sure.
So I think it's just like those experiences, and you talk about like the YouTube channel, right? Like that's my way of trying to almost force myself to go have those new experiences because I think they're valuable to us as aviators.
Yep. And it's, you know, it's good and mission oriented in that, you know, usually when you're doing it, it's with people, kind of rewinding the clock to it being about people. Cause honestly, man, like I enjoy flying a lot and I do enjoy some flights alone, like where I just need to be alone and enjoy what I'm doing. But I actually enjoy the sharing of the flying a lot more than just being solo. Cause it's like this shared fun experience with different friends and different stories to look back on and things you can talk about around a campfire.
Yeah. And I think the other really thing cool. that's exciting about that is for a lot of people who aren't aviators, you know, we go up every day or every 3 months if you're me. Right. But like that, you know, I have my friend, they were on the channel, my friends Lynn and Cassidy. Lynn and Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd never gone flying before. They'd never gone flying since. Well, that's not true. Lynn and I went on a flight again a little bit later. She did a flower bombing competition with me.
Which
was also insane. But we still talk about that. That moment is as present in their memory as a wedding that we've been to together, or you know what I mean? Like for them, it's such an unusual and special thing that we got to share. And it was special for me. Don't get me wrong. It's just like the flying part was an alien to me. So that I think is the other side of it, right? Is you can really enjoy that. I agree. Like I fantasize all the time about owning like a little single seat aircraft. I don't know why. It's just like I'm always like, oh, like, you know, this home built or this fly baby or this whatever, all these like single seat little airplanes. And then like I'll talk to my wife about it and she's very patient. And she'll say, like, yeah, but like you love to talk so much. like who are you gonna talk to? Well, you fly your little single seater. So
you're going to be one of those guys that comes into a towered airport and like won't shut up and just keep rattling off, talking to the controller about everything. Like that guy at Oshkosh a few years ago that would not, did you hear about that? He would not turn around. Yeah. He had no idea about the procedures or anything and would not stop talking on the radio. Finally, they're just like, okay, just land, just land on this runway, because he would not stop talking. Anyway,
yeah, read the NOTAM, right? Read the NOTAM.
He's like, nope, didn't read the NOTAM. I'm headed northbound coming in. They're just like, yeah, go land somewhere else, read the NOTAM. So what heading do you want me to fly? It's just like, dude.
Is this the guy at one point he asked them to read the NOTAM to him?
I don't know. I honestly didn't listen to the whole half hour conversation, but it was pretty bad.
Yeah, it goes back to that safety point, right?
So Cub Air, yeah, Cub Air is a really interesting place because like from an instructor's perspective, the things you learn in tailwheel are things that even I'm trying to teach people, even in the 172 where I start people off with. So, like, a question for you, and maybe this is opening up a can of worms, maybe you aren't aware of it, but do you feel like you're more aware of like the wind direction when you're flying, like right out of the gate? Because I feel like in a tailwind, you have to always know where the wind is coming from so you can counteract. Whereas in a nose wheel airplane, some people have no idea like how to check the wind and how to counteract for it on taxi and everything. Like, that's a foreign concept, even to many commercial pilots.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're more sent you, and some of it felt like it was just because you can't help but feel it in that plane, right? Like it's just a lighter aircraft, and the tailwheel thing, like, it's gonna bite you, like, if you aren't on top.
If you don't,
which don't be like freaked out if you're gonna like don't let that statement keep you from doing it. I think it's just more of a like it's like a respect thing, right? You have to respect this one part of it,
right?
Yeah, I think I'm going soft a little bit in my Cessna days now. Certainly, like, things that catch me now that would have never caught me in the Cub is, like, crosswind correction while taxiing. Like,
right.
That's a thing that there have been a couple, like, blustery days I've been flying where flying with a friend of mine, Marty Burian, is a flight instructor in town here, and he and I will go fly together, and we've flown, you know, it's fun to fly with him as a friend and an instructor because I can push my comfort level, right? When you've got someone a little more experienced with you. And there have definitely been times where I've landed in like really tough crosswind all the way in. And then you're like, ha, right? You just relax. And he's like, whoa, buddy. Yeah. Whoa, buddy. Like, yep. Don't forget to do something with the yoke. And, I don't know. I haven't flown a Cub in a long time now, but like that never would have happened in Cub time because it's going to spin you around if you're not
exactly
keeping track of it. So,
yeah, you're never not flying a tailwheel. Like you got to be thinking about it constantly. I could see people getting lazy in dead calm winds. Right. But that hardly ever happens. So I don't feel like that's so much of an issue. So let's get into the subject of something that I think you and I are kind of uniquely qualified to talk about right now. And that is just, like, juggling family life with continuing to fly. I think like our kids are both pretty young, and it's not easy. Like it actually is pretty difficult. So how would you even broach that subject? Like, sometimes it just feels like chaos, you know, and how do you stay on top of the flying while also being a good father?
I mean, that's such a hard question. I think, the first thing is, and it's still something I struggle with now, you know, once you have kids, like that's your priority, right? Like, yep. my daughters are amazing, and they're really interested in airplanes right now because I also am. So they just kind of pick it up. Like, I'm not forcing it. It's just, they see it's something that excites me, and it excites them too. But we haven't gone flying yet, you know, like they're a little young still for my tastes and my currency, right? Like, you know, someone who flies every day like you, I think if I flew every day like you usually do, like, I would be more comfortable taking my kids up. I'm waiting till they're a little older right now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I think it's the thing that is hard is it's just all time management. I don't know if you feel that way.
It is.
It's just all time management. So it's like everything becomes this like rated cost benefit analysis between my wife and I, you know, and I want to make sure that she feels supported to do the things that she wants to do. And so we're constantly balancing, never mind the financials. It's literally just down to time now, because every time that that I go flying, I'm away from them. And that means that I'm either missing something that could also be important, or separately not there to support the family. So there's like this weird calculation that happens all the time, and you need to balance that, in my opinion. And I don't know if you would agree with this. There is a certain amount of, and this is going to sound kind of like, I don't know what the right word is for it, like a little hippie, right? There's a certain amount of like self-care that happens when we're in the air.
Yep.
And so balancing that self-care and that need for self-care, and knowing that if I go flying for 3 or 4 hours with my buddies, we go have breakfast someplace in Wisconsin and come back, that I would be a better dad.
Right.
Maybe for the next like month.
Yeah.
Because I have recharged myself and I've put in the time for me, and then that allows me to be more present with them instead of, you know, I mean, I caught myself through the night, I'll totally admit, sitting here like, you know, on my phone, like looking at Barnstormers, you know, my daughter did something adorable and my wife's like, you missed it. And I was like, yeah, I did. I missed it because I was doing this, right? So it's like,
right,
that, I think that's the balance. It's like self-care. It's important. You got to do it for yourself to be a better parent. And you have to balance that. You're in this constant battle between, but they need me or whatever. Yeah. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's tough. And, you know, for me, I feel like, not to one up or anything like that, but for me, it's also my job. So it's like, I have this other layer of pressure to fly. And sometimes that makes it easier, right? Because it's how I provide. So it's like, hey, this is my job. Like, I've got to go instruct this person. So it's like, yeah, of course, you can step away. You can go do that. You're providing for the family. That makes sense. But whenever it's something that's just for fun or for no reason, it's like, well, do you really need to do that? Like, you know, you could be home for bedtime. Like, bedtime is the one thing that you completely avoid. Like, there's nothing going on during bedtime. You gotta be there for bedtime.
No, I just think, like, yeah, it's funny for people who don't have kids, man. Like, that bedtime, like, you want to go through, like bedtime is either the most amazing time with two young kids. My kids are 2 and almost 5. Bedtime is either magic or hellscape.
Or it can go from like being magic to all of a sudden, like, at least for me right now, I've got kids at 3 and 1 where the switch flips and suddenly it goes from magic to hell. Like you said, it's like, what happened? Like, what?
We're all happy. We're reading books. And then like we read the wrong book and now we're screaming.
Or I didn't do the right voice, or it's just, it's crazy. So yeah, I totally get it. And I think honestly, a lot of people out there can relate to that. And I think there's an amount of, I don't know, this could be a completely different conversation, of things to be said about pursuing aviation while in this phase where your kids are young. I know that some people could do it, and I wouldn't necessarily discourage them from doing it. 'Cause like you said, there's that self-care, and I don't do very many self-care flights, but I had one before we left for California a while ago. So this would have been in January, and we got some stuff done maintenance wise. I was like driving across the airport, pretty much had everything with me. I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to take off right now. And so I did. And I got up and it was like me. I didn't have like my Instagram iPhone cable that went into my phone. So I couldn't do stories. I couldn't do anything. It was just like me in the plane. And it was so nice. And before I left Alaska to like see the pastels of the pinks and the blues at sunset before I was leaving for a few months, I just felt like so good. Like it felt so good. And definitely helped out a ton. So I think there really is something to be said for that, because when you're a parent, especially in our phase, we're like, we're continuing to give more and more of ourselves and let go of more of our selfish tendencies. At least that's how my life is right now. It's like a daily battle. The more we're letting go of that, like we also still need to be true to ourselves in a certain way. And that can end up being something we give back to our kids. So there is a balance there. I think some people get the balance wrong and just think that they can leave and do their thing and the kids are the kids sort of thing, but that's not my mentality. Like I want to be there for my kids. So yeah, it's a tough balance. It's exhausting sometimes.
And I think, you know, hopefully some of your community members will chime in wherever they're seeing this in the comments. But I think I've been told, I really hope it gets easier. Like you and I are in like the hardest part, right? Because they need like my 4-year-old, you know, she's almost 5. Like I can kind of like cut her loose, right? Like she'd be like, go right, do some cool things. And, you know, starting to make friends. And she's like, she's interested enough in things now where she, I can just be like, hey, like, here's this cool thing you could go do, and she'll go do it.
She can be engrossed in it for hours.
Yeah, but like the 2-year-old, like, she is like a walking wrecking ball.
Right.
And so it's like she needs constant attention to make sure she's just even like baseline safe.
Alive. Alone. Yeah.
Right. So I've heard that it gets better. it gets easier in that way and harder in like all the more complicated, like
emotional. Yep. Friends and bullies and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I
not looking forward to
that's
that.
That's about what I understand. I feel like it scares me a little bit. It's like to think that if this really is actually the easy part, I'm like scared to death of what's to come. But that's why they don't grow up overnight. You know, they're not like a puppy. They don't grow up all quick. Like you have time to absorb it and get there. So what are some things that you are looking forward to in the future? What are you working on right now? Let's tackle that real quick.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, looking forward to the future, I'm just looking forward to when it's safe and we all feel good to like just get back out there.
Right. So if that wasn't a thing and not, it is a thing. So it is a thing, obviously. So like, what are you planning on doing once it all like, you know, releases sort of thing when we can all go back outside?
Yeah. No, I got a ton of things I want to do. I think airplane stuff, right? Like I'm gearing up for the summer. I'm hoping that, just getting some of those self-care flights in, like we were talking about, would be really good. And I'm trying to personally for me plan like the next step. Like it feels like in the next year or two, I'm going to start to have enough time to go IFR or, it's like, I'm like, do I want to do IFR? Do I want to like go get my float plane?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You probably have a viewpoint on that.
I don't know. That's honestly, when you're doing it like for the fun of it, I don't know. Like, My knee-jerk reaction is float plane. But you're actually flying and going places, and you're in Wisconsin, which can have some pretty good weather. So that's the I don't know, good part of my conscience that says that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the IFR thing weighs on me a little bit because I know it'll make me a better pilot, and I know it'll also, even if I, and this might sound naive, like even if I just like baseline keep it pretty, like keep, don't use it to like expand the envelope so much as just like create a safety margin. Net.
That's really wise, actually. And I got some, I did like a survey and someone said that they said that you use your IFR to get out of situations, not to get into them. I thought was really a wise way of looking at it. Obviously for professional pilots, it's a bit different, because it does expand things, but for recreational flyers like you, absolutely. It's amazing.
So that, I mean, that's a thing that weighs in. I think the other thing is, as I do more and more YouTube content, right? Like there are people who, for better or for worse, are learning things from my videos.
Mm-hmm.
And, I always put big disclaimers that I'm not there to teach, and I try very hard not to teach because it's not my position to teach. I believe that. But I know, I've had people reach out and say like, hey, you did this video about getting current again, and you were doing your stall series, getting current. And I watched how you did that, and it made me feel more comfortable. It was kind of a backhanded compliment. It was like, I mean, if you could do it,
yeah,
I could do it. But like, you know, like, so people are learning stuff from my videos, and there is an immense sense of responsibility I feel to make sure that stuff's all super accurate. And all, so like right now, the only way I can do that is vet my content. I vet it with usually two different instructors every time, just to make sure I'm not accidentally teaching something incorrectly, right?
Mm.
Because I know, even though I'm trying not to teach, people are still gonna learn from seeing. So part of me then, long-winded way of saying, part of me wants then to close the loop on that and become an instructor, because that gets rid of some of that ambiguity. And it also makes me feel better about knowing that what I'm doing is, I can like stand behind it. Like the way that you have your courses, or the way that you have, you're a flight instructor. When you teach something in a video, you've got some of the content you create that are instructional tidbits and things like that. Like that stuff that is it's safe for you to do that. And you know, because you have the base of knowledge, that you're being safe with people watching that stuff. So I don't know. I think that's a gray area in YouTube content right now. Is like, I never claim to be an instructor, but I know that when I watch other people do stuff, I'm learning either how not to do it or how to do it, right? So that's just a thing I think about a lot.
I'm gonna put in a plus one for the instructor thing eventually, because I think you'd make a great instructor. You would just put people at ease and you'd have fun, and it just makes sense. It makes sense to me, man. So that's just a plus one. You might need some other plus ones, but
no, let's do it. I'll come up. I'll come up to Alaska, and you can get me through my CFI. Maybe you're about to ask this, like the other stuff, like the other stuff is like, you know, Super Arrow. I've got a bank of content. I'm getting ready to start editing. I'd hoped that I was gonna have time to edit during this new world we live in, and like my job is actually like twice as busy as it was before.
Oh wow, no kidding.
Which is good, because I'm lucky, right? I feel
lucky. Yeah, there was like that initial nervousness, right, that things would slow down or that your job would become obsolete. Like I went through that too, but it actually ended up being pretty similar for me.
And I, you know, I've got friends who are in the film production community, for example, who haven't worked in 60 days, right? Like, so
I
totally get that I'm lucky. And but I was like going into it kind of like, well, this might really suck, but if there's a silver lining, I'll at least have time to work on my channel.
Right. Right.
But I've got this bank of content. And then also we talked about this a little bit offline, starting up a live show from down here in the bunker or whatever I want to call it.
I like the bunker. The bunker is better than the basement. Let's call it the bunker.
So down here in the bunker, the Super Arrow Squadron bunker, gonna be doing like, I just want to get back to that hangar flying stuff, you know. So what we're doing right now, that's what I miss the most right now. So I mean, I miss the flying, but I miss the people more. And so that's the other thing. I'm gonna do an inaugural, I don't know when this is launching, but the day after we record this, doing kind of a first pilot episode, and if that goes well, might be doing that weekly. So maybe I'll hit you up.
Yeah, man, it'd be fun. I don't feel like we touched on anything, but we kind of did. We got some good conversation in.
I'm all over the place, man.
Yeah, that's great. Kind of leaving off here, just to wrap up at our kind of hour mark, what would be your advice to someone that's looking to get into aviation right now? You know, maybe with coronavirus in mind and without.
So I think with coronavirus in mind, you know, now's the time to like hit the books. I think there's a lot of great instructional, you know, you open up the FAR AIM, right? Or the airplane flying handbook. That's what it's called, right? Like,
PHAC is the one that's like knowledge based. So that would be a great one to dive into. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like free. I've got those books down here somewhere, and like if I have a few minutes at night, like I'll page through and like brush up on that material. I think there's that. I know a lot of people have been advocating for sims, flying in sims and stuff. I even do that now a little bit to brush up, like before if I'm a little rusty, I'll go like fly a little bit in flight sim or whatever. But I think like not Corona world or whatever you want to call it, like I think the biggest thing is just like the sense of hope I'd want to convey, right? Like this did not feel like something I would ever be able to do ever.
Right.
I mean, it's an amazing thing that I've been able to experience. And you know, I'm not flying as much as I want to right now, but I still am keeping all my contacts and still getting up there when I can. And I think that if you're sitting there at home thinking like, man, I know so many people like this. It's like, they're like, I just can't do it. And it's like, well, like but you can, like, we can figure this out. It's almost like, I want to be like, how can I figure this out for you? Right. Because I think there's like this dam that you need to break and just like punch through. I think it's accessible. It's more accessible than you think it is. That doesn't mean it's not hard. If it was easy, anyone could do it. But you can do it, right? Like anyone can do it. Right. You just need to push through. You have to be willing to break that barrier. I think the other thing is, for me, when I was first learning, I just assumed that I would get my training and then I'd run out of money and then that'd be like a cool thing I did. And so then I went into the flying clubs. And that totally, like, mm-hmm. was a part of aviation I never even knew existed and has totally saved aviation for me. Like, sharing all the expenses, having a group of people to, when the engine needs an overhaul, or even when it needs to be, when a plane needs to be washed, you've got a group of people right. to, like, take care of this thing. So that's the other thing I would just say is, like, look into that. If you're like, oh, man, like, post-training, how am I going to, like, do this? I can't afford an aircraft. Like, you know, my share of my plane was $3,000, which is a lot of money, but it's less than the Harley that the guy owns next door by a lot.
Right. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, people have their choices of toys, and aviation is not that bad in the grand scheme of things. It's just a matter of where the money goes. And like you said, or in different words from what you said, there are seasons of life. Like right now, it's tough for you and I to fly for fun. And you may get your license and fall into a season of life where you're out of flying for a bit, but like, it's always there. It's kind of ready. So I don't know. My advice would honestly be exactly the same. Anyone can do it. Takes hard work. Make it happen. All right, man. Well, hey, I appreciate you being on the show and, really looking forward to more material you come out with. So let's keep it up. Hope I get to see you in July, but the safe thing will happen. Safety first, fun second, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it'll happen eventually. We just gotta wait it out. And thanks for having me. And thanks for all your support, man. Like, you've been a great you've been a great cheerleader for me to kind of like keep me motivated and stuff. So I just appreciate that. And it's an honor to be here today.
Yep. You bet. There's honestly not a lot of aviation YouTube I watch, but yours is it.
Like, oh, man, I'm going to start blushing.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Take care, and we'll talk soon.
Cool. Thanks, buddy.
All right. A huge thanks goes out to Ryan Dombrowski from Super Aero for joining me on this episode of Aviator Cast from his bunker. So if you guys want to check him out, please go over to YouTube and check out Super Aero. Subscribe. He's such a funny, funny YouTuber. And I wish there were more characters like that in aviation. It's just really refreshing, the type of content that he produces. And it's one of the few that I really, really look forward to. Not disparaging any of my friends that produce content. There's just too much for me to go through these days, maybe because I'm creating my own. But go follow Ryan. You won't regret it. Super Aero on YouTube. So thanks for coming along on this episode of Aviator Cast. Remember that if you need any help in your aviation training, I do have official courses on my website, angleofattack.com, with online ground school. You can find that for private and instrument, soon coming commercial and CFI, and then Checkride Ace, which is a checkride preparation program that I've created to make sure that you ace your checkride. And you can find that for private, instrument, and commercial. So hope you guys are doing well, and look forward to speaking to you soon. We'll have another episode next week. And if there's anything you need, you can always reach out and ask advice or questions. One of the best places is direct messages on Instagram. Again, hope you're doing well. And until next time, throttle on.
We sincerely thank you for joining us on Aviator Cast. Please subscribe through your favorite podcast service and leave a review. Check out more flight training resources at angleofattack.com. There you can find this podcast, many free aviation training videos, as well as online ground school for private instrument, commercial, and CFI. Got a check ride coming up? Checkride Ace from Angle of Attack is your ultimate companion, guiding you through the process so you can conquer your big day. Thanks once again for joining us on Aviator Cast. Turn left, contact Ground Point Niner.